Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. So there was that little debate last night between Trump and Clinton. We'll get to that. And there was the debate last night between Trump and Mike Pence. Here's what Pence said in the vice presidential debate about using the U.S. military in Syria.
I just have to tell you that the provocations by Russia need to be met with American strength. And if Russia chooses to be involved and continue, I should say, to be involved in this barbaric attack on civilians in Aleppo, the United States of America should be prepared to use military force to strike military targets of the Assad regime, to prevent them from this humanitarian crisis that is taking place in Aleppo.
That was Pence in last week's vice presidential debate. And in one of the remarkable moments from last night's debate, Donald Trump disagreed with his running mate on this very important question and asserted that we should support Syria, Russia, and Iran for now.
Mr. Trump, let me repeat the question. If you were president, what would you do about Syria and the humanitarian crisis in Aleppo? And I want to remind you what your running mate said. He said provocations by Russia need to be met with American strength, and that if Russia continues to be involved in airstrikes along with the Syrian government forces of Assad, the United States of America should be prepared to use military force to strike the military targets of the Assad regime.
Okay. He and I haven't spoken, and I disagree. I disagree.
You disagree with your running mate.
I think we have to knock out ISIS. Right now, Syria is fighting ISIS. We have people that want to fight both at the same time. But Syria is no longer Syria. Syria is Russia, and it's Iran.
Trump, from the debate, he never did answer the question of what his plan would be to defeat ISIS, despite Martha Raddatz's repeated attempts. He just announced his running mate's suggestion of what he would do. But afterwards, Mike Pence tweeted what? Congratulations to Trump, and Pence said he's proud to be on the ticket. Just before the debate, Pence had been reported to be considering leaving the ticket because of the Access Hollywood video of Trump released on Friday, in which, as we all know, he boasted of kissing women and grabbing their genitals. That led to this exchange last night with moderator Anderson Cooper.
Just for the record, though, are you saying that what you said on that bus 11 years ago, that you did not actually kiss women without consent or grope women without consent?
I have great respect for women. Nobody has more respect for women than I do.
So for the record,
said,
you're saying you never did that.
I said things that, frankly, you hear these things I said, and I was embarrassed by it, but I have tremendous respect for women.
Have you ever done those things?
And women have respect for me. And I will tell you, no, I have not. And I will tell you that I'm going to make our country safe. We're going to have borders in our country, which we don't have now.
Trump from the debate. And he wasn't, with Anderson Cooper there. And Trump, here's Hillary Clinton reacting to that.
What we all saw and heard on Friday was Donald talking about women, what he thinks about women, what he does to women. And he has said that the video doesn't represent who he is, but I think it's clear to anyone who heard it that it represents exactly who he is, because we've seen this throughout the campaign.
But Trump wasn't taking that, nor was his primary message about the video to be contrite. Instead, here's what he went on to say about women who Bill Clinton allegedly sexually assaulted or harassed, and one whose alleged attacker Hillary was a lawyer for in the 1970s as a court-appointed public defender.
Hillary Clinton attacked those same women and attacked them viciously. Four of them here tonight. One of the women, who is a wonderful woman, at 12 years old, was raped at 12. Her client, she represented, got him off, and she's seen laughing on two separate occasions, laughing at the girl who was raped. Kathy Shelton, that young woman, is here with us tonight. So don't tell me about words. I apologize for those words. But it is things that people say. But what President Clinton did, he was impeached. He lost his license to practice law. He had to pay an $850,000 fine to one of the women, Paula Jones, who's also here tonight. And I will tell you that when Hillary brings up a point like that, and she talks about words that I said 11 years ago, I think it's disgraceful, and I think she should be ashamed of herself, if you want to know the truth.
Can we please hold the applause? Secretary Clinton, you have 2 minutes.
Well, first, let me start by saying that so much of what he's just said is not right, but he gets to run his campaign any way he chooses. He gets to decide what he wants to talk about. Instead of answering people's questions, talking about our agenda, laying out the plans that we have that we think can make a better life and a better country, that's his choice.
And with that, we open the phones for your reactions to anything in last night's debate. And, of course, we'll play many more clips. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we welcome WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, Matt Katz, and Kelly Goff, who's also a Daily Beast columnist, for their thoughts, too. Good morning to all of you.
Hey, Brian.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Kelly, what did you think of the exchange on the video?
Well, here's the thing. When I went to the store yesterday, Brian, and I ran into a young teenager of color who was working as a cashier, and she actually asked me, "Are you getting home to watch the debate? I can't wait to see the debate." And I thought to myself, well, that's a good thing for our country, right? That, you know, for come hell or high water, as much as we can say negative things about what's gone on the last year, at least we have engaged more Americans in this process. And, of course, my attitude swiftly changed when I actually began watching. And I actually thought to myself, I kind of hope to God this young woman is not watching this debate, because I think it was such an embarrassment for our country in terms of both of them. And I thought it was such a testament to why more good people don't run for office, Brian, because we basically watched 90 minutes of personal attacks. I think I heard very little about what this election will actually mean for that young woman of color who was working as a cashier at the store. I didn't really hear either candidate talk about significantly, I mean, a significant portion of the time spent on how they'll make her life better. And so, you know, for me, it was a real disappointment. Not a surprise, but still a disappointment.
Andrea?
Well, I mean, I think that the first 30 minutes of that debate, there was so much anxiety. And I mean, it really is shocking. We've determined we're allowed to say the P word, right, on WNYC?
I guess.
So I was in the nail salon earlier this afternoon, or yesterday afternoon, prior to watching the debate, and a TV segment came on, and they played the Trump tape, and a woman in the nail salon said, "Oh, my God, he said pussy." And I said, "Have you been away?" And she said, "No, I just have been reading it. I haven't heard it." So I feel like there is a visceral shock to hearing it and hearing him talk about it in that first 30 minutes. And the first thing he said about it was, "Nobody has more respect for women than I have," which is a... Everybody older than 12 has seen that tape. So I think it's pretty clear that there are people who have more respect for women than he has. And that's where it started out. Now, having said all of that, I do think by the end of the debate, we actually heard some clear differences on what they would do about ISIS, what they would do about Obamacare, what they would do about climate change. And some of that, I think, was quite interesting. I was in touch with some first-time voters who were watching the debate, and they're actually quite disturbed by what he had to say about Obamacare, because while Trump is absolutely right that it's unsatisfactory for a lot of people, they were like, "Wait, he wants to dismantle it?" So there was some of that actually came out. So I don't know that it was, you know, all in all a horrible debate for America.
And I want to play his Obamacare response a little later, which I actually thought was incoherent and didn't answer the moderator's question. But Andrea Clinton never did respond to the charge that she publicly demeaned women who accused Bill of things or laughed on behalf of that defendant who she defended as a court-appointed public defender in the 70s, accused of raping a 12-year-old who, as a grown-up, was there as a guest of Donald Trump last night. Is a response required?
Well, as she said, you can go to my website, because so many things that he said were false. I mean, you know, Trump saying, "I will... first thing I'm going to do is hire a special prosecutor and you should be in jail." Well, it's sort of like we remember how well it turned out for the Republicans to hire a special prosecutor. That's how we found out about all of this.
But is a response required by her?
You know, this is Honestly, I don't know, and I feel very conflicted about all of this because I think that the sexual politics are so different now than they were in the 90s that maybe there is a, you know, sort of question about how to sort of, you know, in a rational world, yes, I would like to have that discussion. But I also feel like it is so truly disgusting to charge her with things that her husband did in which she stood by him. And, you know, my feeling is that married people have their own compacts, and I feel very uncomfortable saying you must respond for what your spouse did.
And Kelly, I think there's a fact check to be done on the claim that she was laughing at the 12-year-old
right, that's
girl.
Ridiculous. That meme is ridiculous.
Is that what you were just going to talk about?
Going to say that I have to disagree a bit. I actually think the reason that Hillary didn't go more forcefully at the tape is because she couldn't. And I think he knew that, and most people sitting in the audience knew that. Look, I want to be very clear here as someone, everyone listening at this point probably knows I'm not a Donald Trump fan. But in terms of moral character, Bill Clinton does not have the high road. And they know that. Most people who are fans of his policies know that, which is part of why there wasn't greater discussion and defense of him last night. So I don't judge what goes on between two married people in terms of their, you know, in terms of consensual relationships. But I think to Andrea's larger point, there's a big question mark over whether or not Bill Clinton could have gotten elected in the current climate. I think that's part of why you have to kind of either go with what you think of the people's policies and stop having the conversation so much about moral character, because it does get a little silly. I think that's, you know, one of the disappointment for a lot of feminists in terms of she's a great candidate. The sexual politics have changed, but let's be honest here. I don't think that her defense of her husband, if we were to go back, especially to how badly Monica Lewinsky was treated by a lot of feminists, I don't think it's something that would stand the test in today's climate, which is part of why I think this conversation is a sad one for a lot of younger feminists to be having.
WNYC's Kelly Goff and Andrea Bernstein and Matt Katz. Andrea, go ahead, and then I'll bring Matt in on Chris Christie.
I just wanted to say that I think that it's very complicated, because it may be the case that Bill Clinton wouldn't have, wouldn't be winning if he were running for president. I think there's a couple of things. First of all, we should say that there is no proof that Bill Clinton is a rapist. We know that he had a consensual relationship with an intern in which he was obviously in a position of power and she wasn't. So that is, you know, sort of, I think, obviously wrong for anybody's workplace. But he's not running. And she didn't stand up there and say, I approve of everything he did. She just said, I'm not going there. And I think that as a different thing from her standing up there and saying, I'm Hillary Clinton, I approve of everything Bill Clinton did, and you should vote for me, which is not what happened last night.
I think that if his policies were not ones, if his and her policies were not ones that most feminists support, I don't think that's how this conversation would be being had. I think that he and she both get the benefit of the doubt, because most feminists feel that they are better on issues for women. That's the bottom line.
I think that's right. That's how I remember the 90s. It was that, what, we're going to abandon Bill Clinton so that Newt Gingrich or somebody can run the country and make policies for women?
Right.
Right. And let's not forget that, you know, Newt Gingrich shortly had to resign.
Right.
Because of his own, you know, problems with sexual
politics.
But
that's my point, Andrea, is that no one has the high road on this, which is why I felt it was a lose-lose, which is more of why the conversation didn't go down more of a serious road than perhaps we anticipated in terms of her attacking. I don't think she has a lot of leg to stand on in terms of that. And I think that people have to make a decision based on the policies. I just don't think that for some Americans that's going to be the takeaway, and for me that's a bummer.
Right. It just seemed to me so clear that he doesn't understand what sexual assault is and the kinds of conversations, what he dismisses locker room talk, that often leads to sexual talk, the sexual assault, because it makes men think that this kind of stuff is acceptable by their peers. I mean, it took him four questions to even respond to whether he had committed sexual assault. So, like, the Clintons might not have a lot of credibility on all sorts of things, but I mean, when you compare him to Trump and how he displayed himself last night, I mean,
I don't know that a lot of people agree with that. I mean, I have to just be honest, guys. I don't know if you guys read the profile of Juanita Broderick that ran. I can't remember which publication she ran in. A couple. You know what I'm referring to, Brian?
I read it. I read the one in BuzzFeed, I think, right?
Yeah, which was actually, you know, a well done piece. And again, I agree with Andrea's analysis here that this is a different time period. There's language that even men used, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that would not stand today in the age of Twitter, where people can, you know, call you out more effectively. So, but I'm just saying that wholeheartedly, I guess we all just disagree with this. I don't believe the Clintons have the moral high ground in this conversation. I think that's it's one that just becomes a lose-lose for everyone, which is why I think that this has to be a presidential race ultimately on policy. And that's what I want to hear more of. And I just think it's unfortunate that we're so now bogged down. If you think about it, we've now had a 10-minute conversation on who is more immoral, a man who abuses his power to take advantage, the most powerful man in the country who abuses his power to take advantage of an intern, or a man who thinks locker room talk involves saying that you grabbed a woman in her genitals and then saying you didn't on a national stage.
But Bill Clinton isn't running.
I'm not proud to have any of those people as someone, you know, kids talk about as great leaders, which is why I think at this point it should be really a conversation about who's more, you know, whose policies are more effective. Foreign Policy Magazine endorsed Hillary Clinton, which is a break with tradition for them. That's, you know, what I wish we were talking more about.
Nancy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nancy. Hi,
hello?
Nancy. Yes, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. Thank you for answering my call. Yes, I believe that this election is all about sex and infidelities, and they never come to the big issues that we have. And also, those women that Donald Trump wrote last night, I was so ashamed. I didn't want my nieces and my daughter and my cousins to watch this, because how can this woman come and say that Donald Trump is like the epitome of God, you know, whatever he does, what he say is fine. But and then I think what they should have say is that women and girls have to be careful, you know, when men like Donald Trump or Bill Clinton come to the way, and they have to report any advance that these people do. And also, I was just telling also about the evangelicals that they attacking Hillary Clinton because she did not divorce her husband. I think that is such a hypocrisy, because where do they leave Matthew 19:6? They said that you should always stay with your husband. So, and then now they say, oh, wow, you know, he did divorce him. And also, this man has married three times.
Yes, somebody, Nancy, thank you. Somebody said people are angry at Hillary Clinton for not leaving her husband, instead of being angry at Donald Trump for sleeping with another woman and then leaving his wife.
Twice.
But, Matt, Chris Christie, who you cover a lot, did not attend the debate last night and canceled the scheduled appearance as a Trump surrogate yesterday on a Sunday morning talk show, presumably because he didn't want to have to defend the video. But Mike Pence and campaign manager Kellyanne Conway, who also canceled public appearances for Trump this weekend, still wound up clearly on board with Trump right after the debate. So the collective pundit wisdom this morning seems to be that Trump stopped the hemorrhaging of Republican support last night, at least for a while. Is that how you see it? And has Chris Christie, who you cover, reemerged?
Yeah, in terms of the first question, that does appear to be the case. I think if Trump had imploded last night, which he did not, as far as Republicans are concerned, this would have been a different conversation today. But I don't think you're going to see a mass exodus of the entire Republican Party from the Trump campaign today. Christie is a fascinating subplot, because he actually showed up at Trump Tower on Saturday morning, hours after the story broke. He was wearing a Mets hoodie. There were a ton of press there, a ton of Trump supporters there, and a shrinking number of advisors inside. There was Prince Rebus from the RNC, and Rudy Giuliani were inside, and Trump's family and closest advisors, but not a ton of other people. And they were apparently doing some damage control and figuring out the next move going forward. And it seemed like Christie was standing by his man, like he has for the last 8 months. then something changed because he canceled on Jake Tapper. Like you said, this is the second time in the election cycle this has happened. I spoke to Tapper yesterday. This is really unusual in the rarefied world of Sunday morning talk shows. So the campaign replaced him with Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani ended up doing all five major Sunday shows yesterday, Trump splaining his way through this. It was somewhat uncomfortable in some of the interviews, in that clearly Rudy was having trouble defending and explaining this. But, you know, now we have a new day. Kellyanne Conway was the campaign manager. She was back on TV yesterday, despite having canceled on the Sunday morning show. She was back on TV after the debate, spinning this as a win for Trump. And we're going to be watching closely what Christie does, because he was the first establishment Republican to back this guy. He really legitimized him. His people have not answered any of my calls and questions about what he feels about this video, and he's going to have to emerge at some point. It'll be interesting.
Well, the big issues facing the country were not discussed nearly as much as they could have been for all the back and forth about each other's character. They did touch on Obamacare last night, and Trump's answer, as I said before, at least to my eye and ear, was pretty incoherent when asked if he repeals Obamacare as promised. And let's set up the Obamacare clip for next. If he repeals Obamacare as promised, how he'd keep health insurance companies from returning to their old practice of denying coverage to people with pre-existing conditions. This is clip A7, Trump on Obamacare.
You've said you want to end Obamacare. You've also said you want to make coverage accessible for people with pre-existing conditions. How do you force insurance companies to do that if you're no longer mandating that every
We're
American
going to
get
be
insurance?
Able to. You're going to have plans.
What does that mean?
Well, I'll tell you what it means. You're going to have plans that are so good, because we're going to have so much competition in the insurance industry once we break out the lines and allow the competition to come.
Are you going to have a mandate that Americans
Anderson,
have to have health insurance?
Me. President Obama, by keeping those lines, the boundary lines around each state, and it was almost gone until just very toward the end of the passage of Obamacare, which, by the way, was a fraud. You know that, because Jonathan Gruber, the architect of Obamacare, said it was a great lie. It was a big lie. President Obama said, you keep your doctor, you keep your plan. The whole thing was a fraud, and it doesn't work. But when we get rid of those lines, you have competition, and we will be able to keep pre-existing. We'll also be able to help people that don't have money, because we are going to have people protected. And Republicans feel this way, believe it or not, and strongly this way. We're going to block grant into the states. We're going to block grant into Medicaid into the states, so that we will be able to take care of people without the necessary funds to take care of themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Trump.
So, Andrea, what he really said there, all he really said there was, if you let insurance companies compete across state lines, then somehow the market will take care of them covering everybody with a pre-existing condition. That's not an answer.
Right. And I think we know from the way insurance was prior to Obamacare that the insurance market did not take care of it. And I know that, for example, in 2008, the McCain alternative to Obamacare was, let's have competition across state lines. But that doesn't address the question, the fundamental question of how does that help the really sick people? And I also think that sort of out in America, you know, I think there's a conundrum for Hillary Clinton, because there is a lot of dissatisfaction with Obamacare. There's a lot of people who live in areas where there is no competition, who cannot afford the gold plans, so they get the, I don't know, aluminum or tin plans, and they don't really cover a lot of their problems, and they feel like they don't have enough insurance. But for those people, the problems are not that they don't want Obamacare. The problems are that Obamacare is insufficient. And so to actually see Trump say, let's get rid of Obamacare, and we're talking about a really thin swath of voters that are in play here. And to have that kind of answer for those voters who are still pondering, where am I going to land? It's not an answer that gives them great comfort.
Tori in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Tori.
Actually, the last couple of seconds have sort of belied my comment, but my comment is I could not watch that debate last night. I found it so offensive, particularly Mr. Trump, but that's not my point. My point is this. if I couldn't watch it, I suspect I wasn't the only one who couldn't watch it. And there's been some, I don't know, being glad that people this cycle are more engaged in the process than they have been in the past. But I wonder, is that true? Because what we're engaged in is the circus. It's not the issues. And I think, you know, God bless the media. I don't know what else you can do but cover the circus. But somehow it's gone off onto these hysterical tangents that
right.
have nothing to do with the election.
Well, a lot of the media just covers the surface. We at least have our 30 issues and 30 week series going, and
God
a lot of other things on public radio. But
yes.
Tori, I'm curious. You say you couldn't watch the debate last night. Did you watch the first number of minutes and then turn it off?
Yeah, the first number of minutes.
When did you give up?
I gave up when he said, "I'm going to put you in jail," and went off about special prosecutors and all that. And I was repulsed largely by his tone of voice, frankly,
mm-hmm.
which I find so, I don't even know how, sleazy is the easiest thing to call it. But it also was, there's a fantasy land quality of to me, of a great deal of what he says and how he says it. And one of the things that I'm frankly so appalled about is that it gets traction in part of this country. And it makes me worry about us, frankly.
Tori, thank you very much. So, Kelly Goff, what do you think about her question, why people are watching these debates so much? Is it because they're concerned about the issues? I mean, the reason that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders took off to the degree that they did is presumably issue-oriented, but now we do have this circus, and now we do have these, I haven't seen the numbers from last night, but I assume at least the beginning of it was
probably
something
higher than most second presidential debates.
By a little bit. But what do you think?
Well, I have to. Well, for starters, her comment about his voice—it kind of reminds me of what was that? They said that John Gotti actually started doing impersonations of the mob bosses that were portrayed in movies. And I have to say that a friend said last night that she felt that Donald Trump was doing his best Alec Baldwin impersonation. So, for what it's worth, no, I think that there is part of the engagement when I was talking about that cashier that I met was that it has become spectacle, right? It has become the ultimate fodder for Saturday Night Live. So on the one hand, I always love seeing and hearing about more people being engaged in the process than just people like us on this show, right? But on the other hand, I hate the idea of people being engaged and then being so horrified by what they see that it turns them off of the process forever going forward. I mean, I would hate to see that. But I do think, you know, that I feel this way, Brian. I've discussed it on, you know, Political Party, the series, which I want to also, you know, plug as something where we try to dig deep into the issues and get past just the surface and the spectacle at the Green Space. But one of the things we've talked about is, you know, the media being part of the problem this election cycle. I know we say that every election cycle. I would say that in this case, though, it's not just mainstream media, although as that fabulous media columnist in The Washington Post said, this election cycle, mainstream media certainly bears probably an even bigger brunt of the blame for really, you know, reveling in the rise of Donald Trump. I mean, you had Les Moonves who said flat out, bad for America, great for ratings. And so we do bear some responsibility here, but I would say social media is a big part of it too, in that, you know, we should be talking more about Syria. We should be more talking more about income inequality. We should be talking about should we have a federal minimum wage. All of these, should it be raised? All of these things, and instead what we're talking about the most is the tape of what Donald Trump said, which I don't think is irrelevant, and I'm not, you know, Pollyanna-ish enough to say that we should never talk about sex. When it matters and when it sheds light on a candidate, certainly. But that type of conversation should not be overshadowing as much as it has been, and that's been throughout much of this campaign. That's kind of been what the coverage has looked like, and I think that's unfortunate.
And here's another moment from the debate, which is actually the one that led Tory in Manhattan to give up on the debate last night, but this is getting a lot of post-debate coverage. When Trump accused Clinton of deleting many of her emails and wound up at the end of this clip saying if he's elected, she'd be in jail.
and you get a subpoena. You get a subpoena, and after getting the subpoena, you delete 33,000 emails. And then you acid wash them, or bleach them, as you would say, a very expensive process. So we're going to get a special prosecutor, and we're going to look into it, because you know what? People have been, their lives have been destroyed for doing one-fifth of what you've done, and it's a disgrace. And honestly, you ought to be ashamed of
Secretary
yourself.
Secretary Clinton, I want to follow up on that. I'm going to let you talk about email.
Because everything he just said is absolutely false, but I'm not surprised. Really? In the first debate,
and we
in
really,
the debate,
audience needs to
I
calm down here.
I told people that it would be impossible to be fact-checking Donald all the time. I'd never get to talk about anything I want to do and how we're going to really make lives better for people. So, once again, go to HillaryClinton.com. We have literally Trump. You can fact check him in real time. Last time at the first debate, we had millions of people fact checking. So I expect we'll have millions more fact checking because, you know, it is it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah. Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
So, Andrea, first, the fact check, I believe that, in fact, the 33,000 emails that she deemed personal, though she never let any independent person vet them, were deleted before she got a subpoena from the Congressional Benghazi Committee, not after.
Well, let's not forget here that she actually was investigated, not just by a special prosecutor, but by the FBI. The FBI not only got her emails, but they got some email fragments, which they then put together, and they came out saying that she was extremely careless, but they did not have basis for charges. So she actually has been investigated on the emails by the nation's top law enforcement officials.
That, of course, is Trump's charge, that the top law enforcement official, an appointee of President Obama, though he was originally appointed by President Bush, is too politically in the tank, and that's why he's calling for a special prosecutor.
Right, and I think on that point there is evidence of no love lost between the FBI director and Hillary Clinton. And in fact, prosecutors that I have spoken to and people who work in the Justice Department felt like had Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General, not recused herself, he wouldn't have even been able to have that press conference, because prosecutors don't normally come out and say, here are all the bad things we found, but we're not going to try this in a court of law. That aside, the issue of I'm going to put my opponent in jail, I know that there are some Republicans that are spinning that today, and I think even Pence was talking about this was a great moment for Donald Trump. But that is something that dictators do. They put their opponents in jail.
And a lot of people are saying that was banana republic politics. But Matt, kind of in defense of Trump on that, he wasn't just saying, was he, that he would put Hillary Clinton in jail because she's his political opponent. He was suggesting that an objective look at the facts would come to a different conclusion about her actions than FBI Director Comey did, and then therefore she would be in jail. I mean, maybe that's too generous an interpretation, but it was in that context.
Right. Her hypothetical was that, you know, it's good that someone like you is not in charge of meting out justice, so. And he said, well, essentially, if someone like me was in charge, you'd be in jail. That would be a generous way of looking at it. The latest spin from the Trump camp comes from Kellyanne Conway, his campaign manager, who said it was just a quip. I mean, this is not much of a surprise. I mean, Chris Christie's speech at the Republican convention could essentially have been titled Lock Her Up.
Right.
I mean, Republicans have been wanting her to go to prison openly for years now. And this is the latest alleged violation that she committed that should put her in prison. I was really amazed by the number of allegations Trump made against her without really explaining what he was talking about. So much of his speech was like shorthand for Clinton scandals that only Breitbart readers would understand. He kept mentioning Sidney Blumenthal. The average American does not know who Sidney Blumenthal is. He talked about John Gruber and the C on emails. He talked about Debbie Wasserman Schultz and superdelegates and WikiLeaks, which people might have some understanding of, but he never like said what his accusation was. It was just like rattling off nouns that you hear on conservative talk radio and read on Breitbart. Really, I was kind of amazed by that, because he might have been able to land some punches if he was able to maybe explain some of these accusations. I think you saw a lot of the influence of Steve Bannon, the former head of Breitbart, on this debate last night. In fact, Bannon was in the pre-debate press conference.
Yes, he's one of the heads of the Trump campaign now.
That's
after
right.
being the head of Breitbart. And Kelly, there was also Trump seeming to stand behind Clinton during many of her answers and scowl in a dark, intimidating way. And I wasn't sure if that was just him standing on his spot and the camera creating a two-shot that way, or if he was actually positioning himself behind her to look like an imposing presence.
It's incredible you asked about that, Brian, because literally I watched the debate with a group of people and every person commented on it. We actually tried to get a couple of photos of it because we were like, does it just look intimidating on our television, or is this really, is everyone else seeing what we're seeing? But he moved so much, as you probably noticed, it was hard to get one photo of him. Did you notice that? He seemed to rock a lot and spin. It was very strange. So I don't know if it was so much as of a plan as, you know, they didn't really, we all know he's a huge fan of prepping for debates. That was obviously sarcasm for anyone who missed it. And so I couldn't tell if maybe they just didn't prepare him for how to behave when he's not speaking, which, you know, he likes to speak the most. So, but it did look very menacing at times. And I don't actually think it worked in his, to its advantage. So if that was a plan, it was a bad one. That's my take on that.
Well,
by the way, I just have to say for the record too, I didn't notice it so much the first debate. I really noticed the sniffing this time.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't think Howard Dean's going to come out and say he was using cocaine again, which he said in a joking way after the first debate. But I wonder about his doctors. Has he really had a pulmonary checkup?
Yeah, I thought the sniffing was noticeable. And last time, remember, he blamed his mic. But I think the mic was working okay this time. I also really do agree with Kelly that the listeners that I was in touch with, the viewers that I was in touch with, were really freaked out by that. And you, I don't know if anybody read the James Fallows long takeout and debates about where he talked to Jane Goodall about Trump's primate behavior, where he displays sort of, you know, I think that he called it, forgive me if I'm misquoting, but essentially gorilla-like dominance, like puffing at his chest and pacing. And I sort of couldn't believe that he was doing all that last night, because he looked so... He looked like he literally could not stand still and listen. There were a lot of young women who were watching that saying, what is he doing? And that visual image, it's like you can forget all the talk, maybe not the going to jail part, but you can forget a lot of the talk. However, the where he was, that image sticks with you for a long, long time.
It's usually It's usually women who get compared to wild animals in political analysis.
And remember,
I don't know if it's any better when a man gets compared to one.
He was defending the whole backdrop. He was defending what he said on that tape. And if he wants to say, no, I was just talk, I'm not the kind of man who does that, that might not have been the best way to carry himself physically during this debate with a woman opponent.
All right, we'll continue in a minute. Kelly, we'll pick it up when we come back from a break with WNYC's Andrea Bernstein and Matt Katz and Kelly Goff, who hosts our political party series in the Green Space next one, October 27th, by the way, with the theme Follow the Money in the Green Space. And Kelly's a Daily Beast columnist, and more of your calls. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we talk about last night's debate with you on the phones. All our lines are full, but when people finish up, 212-433-WNYC and WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, Matt Katz, and Kelly Goff. There was another October surprise on Friday, kind of lost by the enormity of the reaction to the Trump Access Hollywood video. But it's the WikiLeaks release of emails from Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta about red flag items in Clinton's high-paying Wall Street speeches to Goldman Sachs and others that Bernie Sanders was demanding she release during the primaries, and she never did. The red flag passages Podesta identified included ones in which Clinton said Wall Street was getting excessively blamed for the financial crisis, lamented that it's too difficult for people who've had success or complicated lives to serve in government, said her dream is open borders and open markets throughout the Western Hemisphere, and said politicians do sometimes need to have different positions on the issues in public than in private, which led to this question at the debate last night.
This question involves WikiLeaks' release of purported excerpts of Secretary Clinton's paid speeches, which she has refused to release, and one line in particular in which you, Secretary Clinton, purportedly say you need both a public and private position on certain issues. So, two from Virginia asks, is it okay for politicians to be two-faced? Is it acceptable for a politician to have a private stance on issues? Secretary Clinton,
well,
your 2 minutes.
Right. As I recall, that was something I said about Abraham Lincoln after having seen the wonderful Steven Spielberg movie called Lincoln. It was a master class watching President Lincoln get the Congress to approve the 13th Amendment. It was principled and it was strategic. And I was making the point that it is hard sometimes to get the Congress to do what you want to do, and you have to keep working at it. And yes, President Lincoln was trying to convince some people. He used some arguments. Convincing other people, he used other arguments. That was a great, I thought, a great display of presidential leadership.
And Trump's response to that?
Well, I think I should respond,
Trump,
because it's so ridiculous. Look, now she's blaming. She got caught in a total lie. Her papers went out to all her friends at the banks, Goldman Sachs and everybody else. And she said things, WikiLeaks, that just came out. And she lied. Now she's blaming the lie on the late, great Abraham Lincoln. That's one that I haven't... Okay, Honest Abe. Honest Abe never lied. That's the good thing. That's the big difference between Abraham Lincoln and you. That's a big, big difference. We're talking about some difference.
So, Andrea, I gather you watched the debate with a bunch of college students last night who I presume were, a lot of them were Bernie supporters earlier in the year. How did this go down?
So, this is, was really a very fascinating moment for me because... So I watched it virtually in the sense that we were texting back and forth all night with a group of about a dozen young people who are first-time voters. They're New York City high school students from Staten Island and from Brooklyn.
High school, not college.
Now, they were. Now they're in college.
Okay.
So they're freshmen in college. And they were really upset last year about the Wall Street donations that Hillary Clinton made, about her relationship with Goldman Sachs. This was one of the very key sticking points why they just could not bring themselves to find anything positive to say about her because they were so upset about that. And so I thought, okay, this is interesting. This is a release of a speech which would seem on first blush to indicate that, yes, she was cozy with Wall Street. Yes, she said in theory she supported free trade. A lot of stuff that really would have hurt her in the primary. And I asked them about that, and I think it goes back to Matt's point about Trump just throwing everything at the wall. They couldn't follow it. They didn't. They find Trump such an unreliable messenger that if this were things that Bernie Sanders or his supporters had raised, it would deeply trouble them. But when Trump is raising it, it's sort of just kind of bouncing off them. The comment about WikiLeaks was, if I can't use WikiLeaks for my homework, why can the tomato man use it in his debates? So it didn't. None of it landed. And, you know, at the end of the night, that was a
misunderstanding. That's really funny, actually, if I can't use WikiLeaks for my homework, because that was a reference to Wikipedia, which teachers don't allow kids to use for homework. I know this as a parent, because Wikipedia is not verified.
Right, exactly. So it's conflating a lot of things. And there was one young woman who comes from a conservative family in Staten Island, a lot of law enforcement in her family, who were pro-Trump, and we've been talking the whole year. At the beginning of the night, she said, I don't like either one of them. And at the end of the night, after this fusillade from Trump, this fire hose, as Matt says, of all of these issues, she was like, you know what, I just kind of like her better now because she seemed composed in the face of it. So that, even though there was a lot of stuff there, that if you had parsed it out, delivered it more carefully, really could have shaken, could have hit people on the things they don't like about her. She's two-faced, she's concealing things, she's not candid. That isn't the result for this group of voters who are considering not voting or voting third party and Hillary Clinton. That's where they are. For them, that did not move them. And that is who Trump needs to be speaking to now.
Yeah, so the whole Trump thing has drowned out what could have been a big deal about Hillary supporting open borders hemisphere-wide, having sort of an EU for the Western Hemisphere, which, you know, as we know, Britain just left out of not wanting immigrants, among other reasons. So open borders and open trade, both of which would not be popular.
I also can't believe she didn't release the speeches on like the Friday before Labor Day or something. I mean, if that's really, that's all that was in them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's sort of like, it really does make her look quite bad, but it is not exactly a bombshell of the, for example, the tape that we saw on Friday afternoon.
Kelly, Matt, anything on this? Kelly?
That was a funny – I thought he was actually pretty funny there. I thought it was one of his stronger moments. Now she's trying to compare herself to Abraham Lincoln. He's a smack talker, but he has a better sense of humor in many respects than she does, which I think is part of what might be appealing to some people. You know, she tried at one point to she had the sarcastic line when she was trying to explain to him how the Senate works, because he was saying that she could have changed the tax code as a U.S. senator, and Clinton said, well, there was a Republican president, and then she says presidents have a little something called veto power, and she just doesn't know how to land like a sarcastic quip like that. But he's so good at like talking smack that it came across pretty funny. And I would have actually liked her response. We know she's been in, you know, mired in the political world for a quarter century longer, 40 years, and I would have liked her to use that moment to give a little acknowledgement of that, to maybe show us how the sausage making works. That, yeah, you do sometimes have to withhold a public opinion while you're twisting arms behind the scenes. Maybe give an example from the Clinton administration, how they were able to, you know, get a good policy through because of their work in the working the halls of Capitol Hill. I would have liked to have seen that from her.
Kelly?
I live here in New York, and so like the 9/11 advocacy, I mean, there were a lot of southern state senators, people forget, who were not on board in terms of the funding to rebuild lower Manhattan after 9/11, and there was a lot of behind the scenes negotiating and hand-holding and et cetera to get that pushed through, and also the support for 9/11 workers. But what I was going to say is, if you had asked me before this debate if a question about WikiLeaks would turn out to be one of Hillary Clinton's strongest moments in the debate, I would have laughed. I was actually surprised at how well she handled it, and I wasn't the only one. Everyone watching with me kind of went, whoa, because either she has to be the world's greatest politician to have come up with that response, which we all know she's not, right? That's not really her strength, the politicking, or it was true, and it was a very valid answer. If anything, I think the only downside to the answer is something that Matt brought up before about Trump. I hate that I have to say this out loud, but she didn't actually explain what the 13th Amendment was. And sadly enough, there are probably a lot of Americans who were watching the debate who didn't actually make the connection about why that was such an extraordinary example. That, you know, when you're dealing with slavery, sometimes you have to convince southern elected officials a little differently than you convince northern ones. And so that's sometimes what politicians have to do, because if she'd done that, I think that would have made it such a compelling argument, and it would have made it a little tougher for Trump to come back so flippantly. The last thing I would say, though, Brian, that I think has kind of gotten overlooked is one of the big takeaways from the debate. You know, I think the moment of the first debate was really when Donald Trump went on a tangent about how he has the best temperament to be president and didn't realize he was actually delivering, like, the comedic line of the night. I think that sort of happened a little bit last night when there was confusion about who was going first, and he said, no, 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 you go first, Hillary. After all, I'm a gentleman. And it was just sort of like, okay, this is where we're at right now.
Which I think brings us right to Meredith in Brooklyn. Meredith, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I just wanted to call in. I am a public high school government teacher, And I actually, the majority of my students are new immigrants to the country, and a fair number of them are Muslim as well. And I find myself in a very awkward position having assigned my students to watch the debates last night, because many of the things that came up over the weekend with Trump and the leaked videotapes, I am not actually probably legally allowed to even discuss with my students in the classroom. I myself would be disciplined and perhaps removed from my job if I were to talk about the things he said about women. And then I also feel really badly for my students who were watching the debates and had to hear the very threatening at times ways that Trump talks about immigrants. I think that he redirects every question about immigration straight into ISIS, or he goes into his own endorsement from ICE and how he really sees most immigrants as either illegals, which is a horrible term to use, or criminals. And as a teacher, as a mother, as just like a human being who feels compassion and equality for immigrants in this country, I find that everything that is happening is almost indescribably difficult to confront with students. So I just wanted to know if you had any ideas, any tips, what can be said to the newcomers to this country, and how to reassure them that they're safe and accepted here.
Wow. I don't have any advice for you, but I did want to say that I heard also the same kinds of concerns. Some of the students that I was in contact with were Muslim when that first question came up to Trump, asked by a Muslim voter, and he starts answering a Muslim voter who is sitting in front of him by saying, the Muslims need to report on other Muslims. And then he talks about how all this widely discredited story about how people in San Bernardino, Muslims, knew about the bombs but said nothing. It was a really painful moment in the debate because it showed such a, you know, sort of lack of empathy and understanding for the woman who was literally 10 feet from him. So I think that, I have without a doubt, heard a lot of that. Interestingly, one of the discussions that I did get into was the things that he talked about on policy, on taxes, because I know this is a group that thinks a lot about climate change, it thinks a lot about taxes, it thinks a lot about income inequality, and there was points in the debate were of discussion that could be had. And I think one of the fascinating things is that a lot of these people didn't even realize until last night what Donald Trump's positions were on those issues, because they actually, I think this might have been the first debate that they watched through to the end. And I was texting them, are you still watching? And they did. They watched it till the very end.
So, Meredith, what do you think you will do with your students with respect to the Trump Access Hollywood video?
You know, that's a great question. I honestly cannot discuss the contents of it. I will be... Well, one thing I will say is a great technique I learned from another teacher for watching these debates is to do sort of a checklist for buzzwords that the candidates use. And when my students and I watched the first debates together, we were appalled and shocked to hear Donald Trump use the term stop and frisk 10 times in response to a question about the racial divide. So one thing that we're doing together is sort of just counting the words that are used and paying attention to how that simple measurement really, really speaks a deeper message.
I'm sure your high school students will want to talk about this video. Maybe you can consult with your department chair or your principal or both and figure out how you can broach it with everybody's approval. One of the things going around social media today and really since Friday when the tape came out is lots of stories of women of the times that they were groped. And I'll bet some of the girls in your class, sadly, will have stories to tell and will have very strong reactions to the video and would love to find some context in an educational setting to talk about it. Maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, there. So maybe you can consult with your principal and department chair and figure out a way to do it.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Ann in Park Slope. You're on WNYC. Ann, hi.
Hey, good morning. What a night, huh?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I think that I'd like to think that I represent a lot of the electorate who certainly do not wish to see Donald Trump be president, but have been very conflicted about voting for Hillary Clinton. One of your guests actually referenced WikiLeaks as something that no one was interested in. I actually spent Saturday reading WikiLeaks and poring over it and poring over the attacks in Yemen. And I think that there are a lot of people who were really hoping that this debate was going to address a lot of issues which are keeping us deeply conflicted about casting a vote for Hillary Clinton. And you asked one of your callers when they cut out of the debate. I cut out when Hillary Clinton started saying, "Believe me," which was the cue in the first debate's drinking game at my party. Mm.
And it's usually associated as a Trumpism, yeah.
I at this point, I feel like I went into the debates better prepared than either one of the candidates. I was really looking for serious answers on foreign policy. And I think that a lot, I think there are undecided voters, but I think there are also deeply conflicted voters that I don't believe are going to get any answers anymore. That this has become a sort of dog and pony show with, you know, Donald Trump just wanting to retain some relevance and Hillary Clinton just riding out the clock and not providing any more information.
Anne, thank you very much. Carol in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carol.
Hi, those were really interesting comments, and I hate to go back to the negativity, but I only heard once this weekend about Trump having been accused of spousal rape. And I wonder if anyone else heard it, and I wonder if it's just his lawyers that jumped on it so that it didn't get talked about.
This was by Ivana years ago. Andrea, are you familiar
yes.
with it?
Yes. So in some legal papers having to do with their divorce, she accused him of spousal rape. She has later retracted that comment. But
I wonder how much it cost him for her to retract.
But part of why, can I just jump in and say part of why it was significant, if I recall, because it's been a while since I read about it, is because his lawyer actually said that wasn't possible.
His lawyer say that that wasn't possible to rape your wife. That is, yes, that is what happened. And
there's also something about Trump and a 13-year-old that a lot of callers are calling about.
Right.
Are either of you, any of you familiar with that allegation?
I've heard about it, but I have to tell you, I brought it up with, I was with a group of media people this weekend, and everyone said there's nothing to it. But, you know, we've heard that about other allegations about all sorts of people. So I don't know where that lands, which is, again, why at the beginning of this conversation I said, you know, this is just kind of a sad time to be someone covering people who will leave this country and their relatives.
It was written up. This was written up in the Washington Post, and it has to do with somebody that Trump was associated with, who is a pedophile, who was accused, accused him and Trump of putting her in a sexually compromising position. I think that one of the things that I'm going to be watching for in the next days, and you know, we've been talking about Republicans and whether they're going to be standing by Christie. They actually have a standing by, I meant to say Trump. Christie has been silent, as we have pointed out.
Although he has his own legal issues.
He has his own legal issues, as we well know. One of the dilemmas for them is if they don't denounce him now and somebody comes forward with some other evidence or another tape or something like that,
right.
That is a real risk. We have 30 more days. We have people that are primed now to talk and hand over evidence to news reporters.
And CNN was right. talking over the weekend about an old Howard Stern appearance by Trump where
right.
he was talking about Ivanka's breasts and other things that
Geraldo
are going to be.
Geraldo Rivera says he has tapes.
So there's Apprentice tapes out there, supposedly, where he made contestants twirl and talk about
and allegedly
used
racial
sex.
Slurs. That's the rumor that is being reported also on those tapes.
So if this happens now and Paul Ryan has to say, okay, well, saying These other things was fine, but this is where I draw the line. It has a very potentially destructive force in the Republican Party going forward.
So there are other shoes to drop, but first there's a newscast to drop with Richard Hakes, or Andrea Bernstein, Matt Katz, Kelly Goff. And by the way, those of you who want to see Kelly in person, her next political party with Kelly Goff in the green space is October 27th. Let's put a day of the week on that, Kelly. Is that next Thursday?
I should know that. It's not next Thursday. It's the following. But yeah. I don't know if it's Thursday or Wednesday. That's bad. But we have Dylan Radigan and a bunch of other people joining us to discuss the role of money in politics, which I think a lot of people have strong opinions on.
And you can reserve a ticket for that today at thegreenspace.org. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.